We're continuing in our study of Jeremiah, and we always have something more to learn. And we're so grateful that God has given us enough information so that we are able to bring all of this into focus insofar as God's whole salvation plan is. As we've been looking at Jeremiah 31 for a long time now, we have been really rejoicing and so happy because it is telling us about our day, this time of great tribulation, this time when the day of judgment has already begun on the world and on the churches, and yet outside of the churches there is a great multitude which no man can number that are being saved. And we got down to verse 27, "Behold, the days come, saith Jehovah, that I will sow the house of Israel and the house of Judah with the seed of man and with the seed of beast." Go to Numbers 18. Numbers 18. In verse 15. Numbers 18, verse 15. "Everything that openeth the matrix is the womb, everything that opens the womb in all flesh, which they bring unto Jehovah, whether it be of men or beasts," again it's the word beast, plural, "shall be thine. Nevertheless, the firstborn of man shalt thou surely redeem, and the firstborn of unclean beasts." You see that? "The firstborn of unclean beasts shalt thou redeem." God has a redemption program for all the animals of the world. They're typified by the firstborn of the animals. There is a redemption program. How can we understand that? That's why it says that I will multiply man and beast. There is a redemption program going on. We know God gives us the answer in the New Testament. Go to Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8. When God talks about redeeming the beasts of the earth, now Numbers 18, "I will redeem the firstborn of all the unclean beasts." That means the lions and the tigers and the buffalo and you name it. They're all part of creation. "I will redeem." He is effectively saying, "I have a redemption program for the world," because they are representing the whole world. And we see this in Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8. Now, again, there's a very interesting thing, given the fact that we know that every word in the original language was designed by God. When you look at the original Greek or the original Hebrew of the Old Testament or Greek of the New Testament, and you see the spelling of that word and see what the grammar of that word might be, that word was placed there not at the liberty of the one who was taking the dictation from God, or who was finally writing what we find as the Bible. That was designed by God. So God very carefully chose his words. Now, here we see in Romans chapter 8, beginning with verse 19, we see, "For the earnest expectation of the creature." Now, the Greek word that's translated creature is exactly every letter the same as the Greek word that is translated creation. So that the word that is used here can be correctly translated as creature or as creation. Now, the fact is the creatures that God has in view, or that is the most important, or the highest order of the creation situation are the animals outside of man. Man, of course, we are created in the image of God. We stand completely apart in that sense. But insofar as anything below mankind, it starts with the creature, which are the animals. But at the same time as we talk about the creature, the animals, we're talking about the whole creation, because they represent the whole creation. So we can read this in verse 19, for the earnest expectation of the creature, or we can read it, the earnest expectation of the creation. And both are absolutely correct. Absolutely correect. When we think of the word creature, we have to think about animals that are creatures. But when we look at it, what they represent, then we correctly can say the earnest expectation of the creation. Now let's see what God is saying. The earnest expectation of the creature, who actually represent the whole creation, waiteth for the manifestation of the sons of God. When will be the manifestation of the sons of God? When Christ visibly returns. At that time, we will receive our glorified spiritual body, and then it will be known who were the elect of God. Now we can look out into the world, and we don't know who the sons of God are. We don't, just because someone says, well, I'm a born-again believer, that doesn't mean he is a born-again believer. Only God knows, or that individual, if he truly is following the Word of God, God's Spirit will witness with his Spirit that he's a child of God. But beyond that, we can't, from the outside of a person, I can't see your heart. I can tell you, oh, I know him. I love the Lord. I just want to do his will all the time. And just watch me look, and you'll see how I always do the will of God. But do you know what's going on in my mind? Do you know that if a man looks lustfully at a woman, he already has committed adultery in his heart? Well, wait a minute. I can outwardly be just as holy as possible, and yet have sin going on in my mind, and that sin is just as real as any action that I'm taking outside of my mind. And so, for that reason, nobody can look at anybody else and see their heart. I can't look at any of you and say, I know God has given you a new resurrected soul. That's between you and God. The whole business is between you and God. Well, okay. So here we're reading that the creature or the creation waiteth for the manifestation of the sons of God, and we know that will be on the last day. For the creature, that is, we can also say, for the creation was made subject to vanity, not willingly, but by reason of him also who hath subjected the same in hope. Now, we have to understand, we have to go back to Genesis and remember that when God created this world in 6 days, he created the universe, which included the highest form of the universe below man, keep man separate now, the animals, all the animals. Everything was very good. Everything was perfect. There was no thing going on that was producing wrong things. Like, for example, when you have a poisonous bacteria or a poisonous virus or a poisonous snake or a poisonous plant or a thorn or you have a volcano or you have a hurricane or you can build this up and build it up, and all of those things are detrimental to the universe that God has created. All of those things are negative. Where did they come from? Where did that happen? Is it because the creation starting with the animals on down, somehow rebelled against God? No, no, no. They had nothing to do with that. It's because man, who was the crown of God's creation, rebelled against God. And so we have this very, very curious situation where you have a creation that's perfect, absolutely perfect, ruled over by, and remember, God made man to be the ruler over the creation. He made everything subject to man. And now we got a mankind who have become corrupted by sin, body and soul, corrupted by sin. They've become rebellious against God, ruling over a perfect creation. And even to make matters worse than that, God appointed the serpent Satan to be the ruler over man. And the serpent is, as already demonstrated in the book of Genesis, his rebellion against God when he countermands God for God's statement to Eve, and where God said, "In the day you eat of this fruit, you shall surely die." And then Satan very brazenly, very boldly comes along and says, "Oh no, you will not surely die." In other words, he is a being that is in complete rebellion against God, and God makes him the ruler over mankind. So now you've got Satan, of course, above that is eternal God, and God is the one who is orchestrating all this. He's designing all this. But here now you have this wicked Satan ruling over wicked man, who are spiritually corrupted in every way, ruling over a perfect creation of which the animals are the highest representation of the creation. And that's that. How can that be? So here God explains what happened. God says the creation, or the creature, was made subject to vanity, that is, to emptiness, to futility. It was no longer the perfect creation any longer. God appointed it that there would be thorns and thistles. Remember when he told Adam, "I'm going to you're going to eat bread out of the sweat of your brow, and thorns and thistles are going to come forth." God had cursed the creation. It had become subjected to futility, not of its own will. It says here in verse 20, "For the creature was made subject to vanity, not willingly." Not willingly. It had nothing to do with sin on the part of the animals or the fish or the plants or the whatever it is, any part of the world. But it's because now God had to get things back in its proper order. You have a cursed ruler, Satan, ruling over a cursed mankind, ruling over now a cursed earth. It's everything is cursed. But God has a redemptive plan. This is what Romans 8 is talking about. And that's what we're learning about from Jeremiah 31. God has a redemptive plan for mankind, and those are the firstborn of all man, those who became identified with Christ as the firstborn because they were elected of God. They are redeemed, but at the same time, the whole creation is going to be redeemed. In other words, God has subjected it to this curse of God because of man's sin. But when God is completed with man and has finally redeemed those that he plans to redeem, he's also going to redeem this whole creation. And that's what we read about in passages like 2 Peter chapter 3, where God says this universe will be burned with fire and will be recreated, new heavens and a new earth. Now, it doesn't mean that the animals are going to be recreated. It's going to mean simply that the earth, however God wants to have it designed, will be an absolutely new earth. Just like our bodies are different once we are recreated. We're still a human being, we're still a body, but it's a glorified spiritual body that is quite different in some ways than our present body, and that's all according to what God desires. So now, let's look again at Romans chapter 8. For the verse 20, for the creature or the creation was made subjected to futility or vanity, not willingly, but by reason of him who hath subjected the same in hope that it too would finally be redeemed, like the unclean beasts were redeemed of Numbers 18. You see now why Numbers 18 has what it says? Because the creature or the creation itself also shall be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation groaneth, or a creature groaneth and travaileth in pain together until now. And in other words, God is treating the creation like it's a personality. Of course, the creation doesn't have a personality, but this creation, this world, was not incidental to God's whole salvation plan. We don't really know how it all fits together. We really don't know. But this creation is very, very important in God's plan, because think of it. When he redeems this world, this creation, it will be a new world. It's still this world. Let me back it up this way. Here I have a body, and it is corrupted by sin. Every one of us have a sin-corrupted body, even after we're saved. And not only that, it's got all kinds of weaknesses and blemishes in it and so on, and I finally die. And my body immediately corrupts. The moment the soul leaves the body, immediately my body begins to corrupt. It begins to decay, becomes a stench, and they've got to put it away in the ground somewhere. It cannot be with where life is. But when God resurrects this body of this saved person, it is still his body. Now, maybe the elements of his body, maybe he was buried at sea and the fish have eaten his body, and they in turn have been eaten by other fish, and so finally the elements of his body are strewn all over the ocean floor. Maybe his body was cremated and it's all turned to ashes. But nevertheless, it's still his body. And God is going to raise that body. And in the case of the true believers, he's going to give us a brand new resurrected body, as we read about it in 1 Corinthians 15, a glorified spiritual body that is way more glorious than anything that we have today. But it's still our body. And that is exactly the picture of what's going to happen to this earth. This earth has got its weaknesses. It is wearing out. It is decaying. It is subjected to futility, to vanity. It's not serving nearly as adequately as it used to. It's gradually failing more and more, and yet it's going to be completely destroyed, just like our bodies, physical bodies, are completely destroyed. It's going to be resurrected, a brand new earth, quite different from our present earth. I don't know what it's going to be, but I do know one big difference this earth is down here and heaven is up there. But the new heaven, the new earth, will not have that relationship where earth is down here and heaven is up there. It's going to be one. A new heaven and a new earth, so that we will be right present with Christ continuously. Now, Christ is up there. We're down here. Sure, he comes to us in his spirit, of course, and works in the world. But nevertheless, when the Bible constantly talks about that we are down here, and to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord, and so on. But in the new heaven and the new earth, it is still the earth, but it has been recreated a beautiful, eternal earth, totally identified with heaven. We don't know what it is. And it doesn't mean for a moment that the animals will be there. Not for a moment. They simply are the indicators that God is using to further illustrate the principle of Romans 8, that there is a redemption for everything that God created at the very beginning. He not only created man and his redemption for them, those who become saved, and that's a very, very particular redemption, because we were created in the image of God, and there are those who will, of mankind, who won't be redeemed because they don't have, their sins have never been paid for. But insofar as the universe is concerned, it had no sin. It had nothing to do with the fact that it became under the curse, as we read in Romans 8. It was cursed by God, not willingly. That is, it wasn't something that the earth wanted or the universe wanted, but Christ had to do it because it was ruled over by cursed rulers. And yet God is finally going to come up with a new heaven and a new earth. And this is really what God is pointing to in these verses that we read. I will sow this kingdom with the seed of men and with the seed of beasts. In other words, there is in view. And you see, right today, we are so close to eternity. And in no time flat, we're going to find that Christ appears, and we go right on into glory. Now, incidentally, this is also a very, very interesting piece of information when we read the book of Jonah. Remember in the last couple of verses of the book of Jonah, it says, should I not save this great city that has 120,000 who don't know the right hand from the left, and much cattle, but the Hebrew is, and many beasts. If we don't look at the original language, we might think, well, it's just sheep or those that represent the kingdom of God because we are lambs. No, it's beasts and beasts, indicating that particular incident of Jonah when they were spared is actually looking right at the end of the world. That there is a God, those who were saved in Nineveh represent all those who are being saved in our day, and it indicates that because they are redeemed, also the world itself will be redeemed. This is where we can finally begin to tie that in. Now, I don't claim for a moment that as God has given us all this information, that it all comes out easy, and that finally we can say, well, no, it's clear as day. I understand everything. It's God has written about these things in a very complex way. But I believe absolutely we can see that the creation is what God has in view as he talks about beasts. But that's as far as we're going to get. And in our next study, we're going to go on. And we got another interesting passage in the next couple of verses that really we wonder about why that talks about the proverb that the fathers have sinned in the or have eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge. Why did God introduce that at this point? And we'll look at that in our next study.